This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance.
Now you obviously can't have fans taking a mask down and shouting at our players with the virus out there.
There was a back and forth between two grown men. I missed that interaction.
So LeBron James gets into it with some fans verbally, and the fans are ejected, four fans removed. One woman had a lot to say on social media after the fact, and LeBron went at her on Twitter saying courtside Karen was mad. But listen to what LeBron said about the situation after the game.
No, at the end of the day, that's I'm happy fans are back in the building. I miss that interaction. I need that interaction. We as players need that interaction. I don't feel like it was warranted to be kicked out. There was a back and forth between two grown men, and we said our piece. He said his piece. I said my piece. And then when someone else jumped into it and said their piece, but I didn't think they were. Should have been kicked out. But they might have had a couple of drinks maybe, and they could have probably kept it going, and the game wouldn't have been about the game no more. So I think the referees did what they had to do.
LeBron James is a guy who can get down in the mud and wrestle with someone and come out clean, because he went into the fray, and then he's sort of above the fray too. No, they shouldn't have been kicked out. And look, we said what we had to say. You could even, profanity is obviously used in NBA arenas. That's not what gets to players, just cursing. It's certain things you might say to them that involve curses, or obviously if you make it personal, then like anyone, they're going to get offended. But just kind of normal trash talking, I think a lot of athletes understand, obviously, including LeBron. I don't think those people should have been removed either. The only thing I'll say about that is this. If it was the case that they were yelling without their masks on, that one woman who said the stuff on social media afterward, you saw her on the video on ESPN Plus we ran. If it was the case that she was yelling with her mask off, and she was first told by security, hey, you got to keep your mask on, and she didn't comply, then I get it. Because I'm not trying to make it people crazy with, look, sometimes, not just like people with asthma or whatever, just sometimes it's hard to breathe in the mask. Or sometimes the mask can get damp if it's humid whatever. Or you maybe just want to eat something. Or someone you're talking on the phone, they can't really hear you because it's muffled a little bit. So I get taking off the mask for different reasons here and there. Even though it's really important that you keep it on as much as possible because this pandemic is still raging and we have not produced enough vaccines yet. And hospitals are still overwhelmed, right? And it's deadly. But the mask is not about protecting yourself. It's about protecting the other person. Their mask protects you. Your mask protects them. Because really what it's there for is not covering your nose or your mouth so you don't breathe anything in. It's so you don't expel anything. As you talk, and by the way, the louder and more often you talk, the more stuff from your mouth goes into the atmosphere. Especially in a closed space, you're not outside, whether or not there's ventilation, there's not like a breeze, it's not like unlimited air capacity, and also you may be closer to people in an arena, even if they're social distancing. If you're yelling a lot without your mask, they may think it's a health hazard. That said, it's either that and I understand, or I don't think they should have been removed, especially if LeBron doesn't think they should be removed. And by the way, a lot has been made of the Lakers slipping in these power rankings recently, right? Clippers on top. First it was the Jazz, now it's the Clippers, and the Lakers have slid. The Lakers just went on a 7-game road trip to the East Coast where they went 5-2. One of those losses was the second of back-to-back, and AD didn't play. I'm not worried. There may be reasons to be worried about the Lakers in the postseason. I still think they'll win back-to-back championships this year. But maybe you look and you say, look, there's no Rondo. Come playoff time, Rondo's an all-star. And maybe you look at Brooklyn and believe, yeah, they're going to make a move for a defensive player in the front court by the break. And you're going to need, you know, they have three all-stars on offense, superstars on offense. The Lakers have two. And even though AD can get his own shot, he can't get his own shot on the level that, you know, KD or Harden or Kyrie can. Like, he came up as a guard, I get it, before his growth spurt. But he doesn't still have guard skills in the sense that, like, you couldn't play AD at the one or the two. You could play Kyrie, Harden, and KD at the one or the two. Like that. So it's a little different level in terms of, like, you know, handles and stuff. So the Lakers may feel like, and you may feel as Lakers fans in L.A., you know what? And Lakers fans are everywhere, not just L.A. You know what? Schroeder is going to have to step up. Someone on this team is going to have to step up and play at all-star level in the playoffs or if and when they meet the Nets. And it can't be Rondo because he's gone this year. So there are reasons that a Lakers fan might say, there's no perfect team. Every fan of a team is concerned that this or that could go wrong possibly. But this road trip going 5-2 is nothing. Anything. That's nothing to be worried about. 5-2 and one of those losses is second to back-to-back with AD not playing? Come on, everybody. Tom Brady said he's open to playing beyond age 45. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. This is what Brady said. I definitely consider that. He was asked point blank at a press conference. He definitely consider it. Brady's 43 now. Said repeatedly that he'd like to play until he was 45. Now saying he'd consider playing after, you know, past 45. Now, I had Tom House, Tom Brady's throwing coach, on this program yesterday on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, 2 p.m. Eastern, weekdays. I had him on yesterday. And Tom House was also the pitching coach. He was a relief pitcher, pretty good, in the 70s. Had one season with a sub-2 ERA out of the bullpen. And his ERA for his career, I think, was a tick below league average, which is good. But Tom House was Nolan Ryan's pitching coach. And Nolan Ryan, like Tom Brady, had a freakishly long career. You could argue when Nolan Ryan was in his age 44 season, he was the best pitcher in baseball that year. He was in the conversation, certainly. Led the league in walks and hits to innings pitched, led the league in strikeouts per nine, had a real low ERA. He was at least as an effective a pitcher, maybe more, than he was in his so-called prime at 44. And at 45, he was still very good, and at 46, he was still getting guys out. So I asked Tom House about the similarities between Nolan Ryan and Tom Brady. This is what he said yesterday.
What we learned from him is there's no reason you can't do at age 45 what you did at age 25 if you follow a process that is conducive to prolonging your career. And what Nolan did and what Tom Brady is doing is exactly that. Every athlete that comes to us comes with the idea that they're going to get biomechanics, functional strength, mental, emotional, and nutrition and sleep for recovery. Those are the four pillars for long-term health and performance. And every one of these superstars, every one of these Hall of Famers, literally try to get better every day in each of those pillars.
Well, I believe it won't happen if that's not the case. I do believe that. But I think a couple of things that are not mentioned there is, number one, you have to be freakish genetically. Like Nolan Ryan used to throw over 200 pitches in a game and never had a season where he, like, you know, his injury seasons, he'd make like 27 starts. This dude was throwing 100 miles an hour back then. So you got to be a freak genetically, and you also have to get lucky. But given all those things, Brady's obviously freakish genetically. He clearly does all the things Tom House just said and has a next-level kind of determination and preparation, and he's gotten lucky. Given those things, yes, every snap could be his last. Every down could be his last. He's playing in the NFL. Nevertheless, with the rules now favoring quarterbacks, can't look at him sideways, you get thrown out of the game. With the new rules now favoring quarterbacks, and given the fact that Nolan Ryan was you can't compare Tom Brady to football players anymore. He blasted past that. Forget Warren Moon, Testaverde, Doug Flutie. He's by far the best ever old quarterback. you got to start comparing them to other athletes who had great longevity. Bernard Hopkins was 49 years old, beating world-class fighters at light heavyweight. Nolan Ryan was 46 years old, still getting major league hitters out. Yeah, I think Tom Brady can do it. I think it's possible. It's time for Breaking Moves with KC Joyner.
Breaking Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
Kansas City plays backup center Daniel Kilgore in the reserve COVID-19 list due to close contact.
At practice, their entire offensive line will play every single position on the line.
KC Joyner, the football scientist, joins me on the Goodyear Hotline. Analytical approach to the Super Bowl. KC, it occurs to me that a lot of why people love the Chiefs in this game, and they're favored, is because Patrick Mahomes is Superman, and we just expect him. Yes, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are great, but we expect Patrick Mahomes to overcome everything. Bucks have a better defense, all three levels. Bucks have a high-powered offense. Brady's got a ton of weapons. And KC, they're missing two Pro Bowl caliber tackles, one on each side, and now maybe their center, which means that the Bucks may be able to get pressure with four, which means they can afford to bracket Tyreek Hill so he doesn't kill him again and pay extra attention to Kelce. What makes the Chiefs so hard to beat in this game that they're still favorites, KC?
Well, if you take a look at the Chiefs in the last three seasons, if you take out the Week 17 contest against the Chargers, the meeting of anyone of us at the starters this year, if you don't get them into a shootout game, and a shootout game is where each team scores 24 or more points, the Chiefs are 28-1. Yeah, pretty good. They're 16-9 if you get them in a shootout game. So the concern for any team is you've got to go in there, you got to score 24 points. And that you're gonna have to score at least 24 because to get the Kansas City in a shootout, you're gonna expect that they score 24. So you get to score more than 24 points to beat them, for one. And for two, the Chiefs are really good, and I think this is something that's going to show up in this game. They're really good at being explosive. We know they've got an explosive offense. They can hit from anywhere on the field. They also had, and they were tied for the third highest average time of possession per drive, 2 minutes and 59 seconds. So they have a way of making sure that they can reduce the number of drives that they're going to have to face on defense.
That's
in the game.
Very interesting. But, wait a minute. So yeah. Because they're explosive, in other words, there are various ways you can have a high-powered offense. You can be able to score on fewer plays, as the Chiefs are able to do, both because of Tyreek Hill is a deep threat, but also yards after catch, and Mahomes is Superman. And so as a result, if you limit the number of possessions, it's like your slugging percentage is so high, you're so likely to hit a home run that the fewer possessions each team has, the more likely the Chiefs are to win from Andy Reid's point of view because they hit more home runs.
They want to keep the number of drives low. They were tied for the sixth lowest number of offensive drives overall this season. And the thing is, they're at 2 minutes and 59 seconds per offensive drive. The Bucks have the fifth lowest time of possession per drive. They're at 2 minutes and 34 seconds. Think about that. It's only 25 seconds per drive. It's not that much per drive, but if you add that up over 10 drives, so then you're taking 4 minutes out of the game, and maybe in a good situation, you're taking 5 minutes out of the game. You're taking a couple of drives away from the other team. Kansas City they've only had 17 offensive drives in the playoffs this year, 8 against Cleveland, 9 against Buffalo. They like to keep the down that level because if they figure if we have 8 offensive drives, you have 8 offensive drives, and we're just a higher percentage offense than you. That's the way they go about trying to win.
Right. So wait, is what I said right or wrong? Right. So the fewer drives in a game, the more likely, I said possession, the fewer drives in a game, the more likely the Chiefs are to win because they can do more with each drive is what you're saying.
That's correct, and the Bucks take the opposite approach. Yeah, the Bucks have that no risk it, no biscuit approach, and they try to be really aggressive. Most of their games are going to have 11 or 12 drives per game. Doesn't sound like much, but if you're aiming for 8 or 9, if you're Kansas City, and you're aiming for 11 or 12 as Tampa Bay, those extra drives, that's where, okay, hey, we tried to throw a deep pass and it didn't work. We had to go three and out. Maybe we threw an interception. The aggressive approach the Tampa Bay takes, they just figure we'll beat you on volume of drives because we're just going to make more big plays because you're going to have to play big play against us. And Kansas City takes the opposite approach. So whichever team can drive the number of time of, or you know, drive the number of possessions in this game, I think that's going to be the key difference.
And yet Kansas City, even if you do have a lot of drives, I imagine is also still very dangerous.
They are. They both score. Both these offenses score. I believe they have a scoring drive percentage of 47.9 for Kansas City and 47.8 for Tampa Bay. It's both are near the top of the league. They both score a lot, but Kansas City, but Tampa Bay only had, I believe, it was 19 more points than Kansas City this year, despite having 17 more offensive drives. So Tampa Bay just needs a higher volume of drives. And I think, like I say, Kansas City, they'll throw a dig, hit an 18-yard dig, and maybe get 20, 25 yards of it. Hey, that's a great big play. They don't go up there like the old Buffalo Bills K-gun offense with Jim Kelly and say, let's go hurry up. They say, fine, let's milk 40 seconds off the clock. Let's make sure we take enough time on this drive. And on defense, they do the same. They sit back and say, you're just going to have to go 10 plays against us. If you get down near the red zone, they're not very good. The point is they try and keep you from getting there by saying you're going to have to go 6, 7, 8, 9 drives, and even if you do, we're making you take time, and we're only going to have to face 9 possessions a game.
Only thing I'm trying to figure out, the Bucs are explosive on offense, so they want a lot of drives because even if their percentage isn't as high, you just keep taking more whacks at it, more cracks at it, and you're likely to score. You're saying Kansas City will slow down. They're not hurrying up to the line of scrimmage. They're slowing down because per play, they're more explosive. That somehow doesn't add up to me. So what you're saying is they're both very explosive, but they have different philosophies about approaching how they're going to apply that explosiveness?
I think it's a matter of, again, thinking of that Kagan offense. I don't think that Tampa Bay runs a hurry-up offense, but Tampa Bay, because they're going to go with that no risk it, no biscuit approach, they're going to say we're going to throw a lot of deep passes. They may put themselves into situations where we know, hey, if this doesn't work, if we go take this hugely risky approach, we're going to have, if you give us, you know, cover two defense, we're still going to throw deep. If they take that approach, it might lead to more interceptions. We've seen Tom Brady be a bit interception prone this year, comparative to what he used to be. But we've seen that out of him. So they'll take more chances. They know we might get more turnovers, but that's why we're going to be such a big play defense, too, because we think we can make plays on both sides of the ball. They're
they were
not
a big
worried
play.
About trying
hey,
to slow
Casey,
the game down.
They were a big play offense last year, and they had a defense. And is really the difference simply that Tom Brady turns it over much less than Jameis Winston, or are there other things he's bringing to the offense?
I think, well, it used to be that you might be able to get away with an interception per game. If you compare interception rates to the NFL now from, say, 20, 25 years ago, there are things that you could get away with years and years ago that you can't get away with today. There's no way in the NFL today, given how much offenses have driven down the interception rates, that you can get away with having 30 interceptions and expect to make the playoffs. I think that's the number one factor. Even if you just cut that down to 15 with average quarterback play, it would have put the 2019 Bucs into the playoffs. And with Brady being as good as he is, obviously it makes a difference the other way. So, yeah, I think it's all turnovers because you just can't get away with the same type of high interception approach nowadays as you could even just 10 years ago. The interception rates in the NFL plummeted.
But Brady didn't have half of Winston's interceptions. He had fewer than that. And right, even with half of them, they're probably a 9 or 10 win team. And maybe making the playoffs, and then you add the premium Tom Brady gave them over that, and here they are in the Super Bowl. I'm very concerned for the Chiefs based on the minimum, both tackles missing, maybe also the center. I think that allows the Bucs to try to get pressure with four. I think they'll be able to do it. I think that means that they can successfully bracket Tyreek Hill and at least slow him down compared to their first meeting. I think it probably comes down to Travis Kelce helping out, blocking, and also catching passes and all that. And the only reason I take the Chiefs, KC, is because I just have faith that Mahomes does, you know, works miracles. Who should be favored in this game before I let you go?
I still think it should be the Chiefs, and I think that you're right on all of these. The one factor, though, that is a problem for the Bucs is Carlton Davis, one of their starting cornerbacks. 11.9 yards per target per Pro Football Reference since week 9 of this year, and he's allowed 9.9 yards per target in all but or more higher in all but one game and allowed 6 touchdowns. You just Bill Walsh used to say, if you've got a coverage weakness on defense, and there's a good offensive coordinator facing that team, you're never going to be able to truly hide that coverage weakness. I think the Bucs are going to have a problem with Davis. They haven't been able to hide him for the last 3 months, and I don't think they're going to be able to hide him on Sunday.
Casey Joyner, ladies and gentlemen. Casey Joyner, the football scientist, at Casey Joyner, TFS, joined us on the Goodyear Hotline. Thank you, Casey. Helping you discover the road ahead, Goodyear, more driven. How does LeBron get down in the mix? Raj wrote that. Get down in the mix, Raj. What is this, 1976? Who are we, cool in the get down in the mix? How does LeBron get down in the dirt but stay so clean? Lakers sideline reporter Mike Trudell coming right up. By the way, DraftKings, don't look at the glasses half empty. Don't be a fool. Well, I like DraftKings better when there were more players, there were more games. Guys, you're missing the big picture here. You can still play DraftKings football one last game this year. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code MAX to enter the free $55 million prediction challenge. Download the app now. You can enter the free prediction challenge. Answer questions like, who'll score last? Boom, you get ready to make it rain. Everyone gets an instant prize up to $25,000 just for playing. So you use promo code MAX, Max. Do it now and enter the free $55 million prediction challenge only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55. Terms, conditions, and eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. How does LeBron do it? Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Yeah, you obviously can't have fans taking a mask down and shouting at our players with the virus out there.
There was a back and forth between two grown men, and then when someone else jumped into it and said their piece. I missed that interaction.
You were happy that this happened, though, right? Like, you enjoyed
it. Oh, me?
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Boy, this is one of my favorite. What is it? Spotty, Opie, Dopealicious, what? I don't know the names of any songs anymore. I just know the numbers on the CDs back in the day. But this is my favorite Outkast song. After going 5-2 on the road, are you worried, Lakers fans? One of those two losses, second of back to back on the road without AD. Really, kind of like 5-1 on a long road trip. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Lakers sideline reporter, my dude, Mike Trudell, joins me on the Goodyear Hotline right now. What's up, Mike?
Oh, Max, it's a pleasure to hear from you, man. Miss having you physically here in Los Angeles, man.
Yes.
How you doing out there?
Yes, so does all of Los Angeles, Mike. Mike, I'm cold. What do you mean, how am I doing? I'm freezing. Let me ask you this, Mike, because I know you're not traveling with the team now because of COVID, right? The reporters are not going to do road games. Is that correct?
That's right.
What is your understanding as to why courtside Karen, as LeBron referred to her, who was mad, why was she and her three companions, why were they ejected from the game?
I really don't know. I do think that, Max, whatever game that you're watching in the NBA, if you ever have a star or really any player like point to a specific fan, usually that fan ends up getting escorted out almost for any circumstance. Like, I think usually whether it's the referees, the security folk, they just sort of trust that if a player is going to actually relay that something happened, that you're going to see some ejections. I heard the point that you made earlier on First Take, though, Max, and I thought you kind of nailed it. Look, the simple thing is, once the mask came down, that was the part of it that made me uncomfortable. Trash talk, as long as it's within certain borders, even if there's explicit language, I can understand that. That happens. That's part of the fun, as LeBron referred to in the audio that you played. But I think, in these current times, pandemic's still going on, the thing that would worry me is the pulling of the mask down.
Right. But what you bring up is really interesting. I hadn't even considered that. If a superstar points at a fan, usually that fan, in my experience, is removed. And LeBron coming out after the fact and saying, no, they shouldn't have been taken out. But on the other hand, you're saying you saw him point to courtside Karen, as he called her. And in fact, that's what did it, you believe.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I saw. I'd have to think back and watch the clip. I don't know if he actually pointed. I think it was more just they were asking what was going on. But it was clear there was a direct dialogue, right, between him and I guess apparently it was first it was the husband. And so, yeah, so I don't know, Max, what ultimately did the trick there. I just the macro point I think you take out of it is just if fans are going to be that close, and there's only so many arenas around the NBA in which they are, like Memphis, for example. I remember at an earlier Laker game. Those protocols really need to be adhered to, given the climate that we're in right now.
Before I let you go, Mike, what was the attitude, so far as you could discern it, with the Lakers after the Nets made that deal? They are historically, since the Harden trade, the worst defensive team of all time per 100 possessions, but they're the best offensive team of all time per 100 possessions. And Mike, they don't even know what they're doing on offense yet. Like, considering the Mavs last year had the most efficient offense ever, I think the Nets are going to shatter that this year. But I also believe they're going to add a defensive piece before the deadline, someone to grab some defensive boards at least. What have you noticed about the Lakers' disposition toward the Nets since the Harden deal, if there's been any?
Yeah, I mean, so Anthony Davis was asked about it specifically, Max, and he just gave them sort of the typical respect of, yeah, you know, those stars together, they're going to be an issue, they're going to be a problem. I would just say that when you talk about the elite offenses and how Dallas is discussed last year because they had the best offensive rating, that doesn't make them the best offensive team. Part of that has to do with the fact that they weren't playing great defense, and therefore the scores were higher, and they were scoring at a more efficient clip. But it doesn't.
By the way, Mike, certainly that's the case with the Nets this year so far. They have played a bunch of bottom feeders. And by the way, the disturbing thing is they have the worst defense ever, efficiency-wise, against those awful teams.
Right. Same thing with the Wizards last year, right? They had a quote-unquote great offense, but part of that was because they just weren't playing any defense so that the pace was up. So that's one thing. But I think here's the bottom line, and I think you'll agree with this. Ultimately, to win an NBA title, you have to have the most, or at least the closest to the most, real two-way players that can impact the game both ways. LeBron James and Anthony Davis, they can do that. Even if you look at a team like the Blazers, you know, McCollum and Lillard, they don't impact the game defensively. Jokic and Murray for Denver, they don't impact defensively. So can Brooklyn get that out of KD? Can Harden make a change on that and get a little better? And can they bring in somebody else? Because it has to be both, Max. It's all of the above. That's what the Lakers had last year. They still have it this year. Clippers have a chance to get there, right, because of Kawhi and Paul George. But that's what you need to win an NBA title.
I think that's an interesting theory. I'll say this, though. I believe that, in fact, the Nets offense is that good, that in the history of the game, there have never been three players whose skills and talent are pitched this high, still in or around their primes, as the big three in Brooklyn, where they can all do the following. Get their own shot and hit that shot anywhere on the floor, including the free throw line, three-point line, at historically elite levels, right? Like, they have three dudes who can do that. And then they also have Joe Harris, who shoots better than all of them. So I think just in terms of scoring, they're going to be impossible. And then the question becomes, can they at least be a middle-of-the-pack defense? The only team in the NBA for most of this season that is both elite offensively and defensively are the Lakers, largely because of the point you made. But I think the Nets offense is going to be so overwhelming that if they can just get to a mid-level defensive team, I still like the Lakers, but they're going to be a problem. The great Mike Trudell, ladies and gentlemen, Laker, of course, you know him on 710 ESPN out in Los Angeles, but now you know him all over the country. Mike, thanks for coming on. And normally, by the way, Mike would be traveling with the team and could tell you exactly what happened with LeBron and the fan. But such is the world we live in, at least temporarily, with COVID and social distancing, that we're guessing nowadays. Up next, the answer is no one, but we'll still play. Who's smarter than Max? The latest 30 for 30, Al Davis versus the NFL, looks back on the long-running feud between Raiders owner Al Davis and the NFL commissioner Pete Rozelle, two of the most influential figures in the history of pro football, beginning in the mid-1960s when Rozelle was the NFL's young commissioner and Davis led the rival AFL, and continuing through the 1980s when Davis waged a lawsuit against the league to allow him to move the Raiders from Oakland to Los Angeles. The two titans were constantly and very publicly at odds. The latest 30 for 30, Al Davis versus the NFL, premieres Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Immediately following its debut, check out Jalen and Jacoby, The After Show, podcast, where the guys will be joined by director Ken Rogers. And of course, if you'd like to be entertained and get smarter about sports at the same time, listen and subscribe to Jalen and Jacoby, the after show, wherever you get your podcasts. Ridiculous question Raj is asking. Who's smarter than Max? Coming up, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. It's the game taking the country by storm with a ridiculous title, Who's Smarter Than Max? Roger, are we ready to play?
We are ready to play. Bubba, are you ready to play, B?
I mean, I'm the reigning champ, so the answer is me so far.
Unbelievable.
Okay, all right, well, here we go. Well, I don't know if you guys know, but there'll be a game played this Sunday, and they call it the Super Bowl. There will also be an MVP named after this game, a Super Bowl MVP. So my question to you two, and B, you can go first this time. Name me the last 10 Super Bowl MVPs. The last 10. I said last 10 players to win it. Last 10 players to win it. Go ahead, B, whenever you're ready.
Tom Brady.
No writing anything down. No writing anything down. Okay, Tom Brady, that's one of them. That's right. He got two, but he only counts as one person. Go ahead, Max.
Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, there you go. Now you got it, Matt. Patrick Mahomes, of course, the reigning Super Bowl MVP. You got another one for me, B?
Santonio Holmes.
Well, I said last 10 years. And you would be extending beyond those 10 years. So we have a new champion. His name is Max Kellerman.
Nobody's smarter than me.
Crank up his music. Crank up his winning music.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Right.
Uh-oh. I start you to kick things over in the studio.
Yes. So
I often drift when I drive.
One of the correct answers would have been Julian Edelman. Mm-hmm. Remember the great old Nick Foles?
Eli Manning.
1-1. Malcolm Smith. Joe Flacco, and then the great Eli Manning,
right.
Aaron Rodgers, and then Drew Brees. Oh, you just went 1 year back too far, I believe, on your beef. Good try. So you 1-1. There you go. Good job.
Do you know there are only five players to win at least two MVPs, two Super Bowl MVPs in the history of football?
Well,
let's see if Raj.
Get
name those five players, Raj.
All right. I'll go. Oh, you want to put the music back on for me? I'll go Tom Brady.
Correct. That's one.
How about the great Joe Montana?
Two.
Uh-oh. What about the great? The only one won. I think 12 days ago. All right. How about Eli? Eli won two.
Correct.
Maybe. Okay. So I got two more people. Terry Bradshaw. How about if I go back
Correct.
To Terry Bradshaw? So there's one more person, huh?
Yep.
Uh-oh. Bart Starr? Someone like
Correct. Oh, Rod, you got
it. I got it.
It.
Oh, see, that's why I get to host the game. That's why I get to host it. That's
Bart
right.
Starr did it. That's as many as Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers combined.
Hey.
Brian from Pennsylvania, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max, how you doing?
Go ahead, Brian.
Max, I'm just curious. I'm tired of hearing about the Nets. And I understand LeBron and the Lakers. You know, we're going to hear about them forever. Why is nobody giving our 76ers any due? They're 2.5 games up in the division. They're the best in the East right now. And Embiid's playing like he's out of his head.
I agree. I think this is the reason. The Sixers, and Embiid has had injury issues throughout his career, and I think people don't trust that he's going to hold up the entire way, including the playoffs. That's one. Two, Ben Simmons is an excellent player. But the fact is, and it sounds unoriginal and boring and pat, but he can't shoot, and he doesn't shoot. And it really does make a difference. As I said, the big three in Brooklyn, what's unique about them is not only can all three get their own shots at historically great levels, but they can hit them from anywhere on the floor. That's never happened before. Not at that level where each of the three can get their own shot and hit them like that. Even the Warriors' big three, Klay, can hit his shot, but he couldn't get his own shot at the level Kyrie can, obviously. And Ben Simmons not being able to shoot does, I think. Like, if Ben Simmons could shoot the ball, I think people would feel differently. Now, Tyrese Maxey and Thybulle and a couple other young players are interesting pieces. but none of them are elite. It's just Embiid and Simmons. Tobias Harris having an excellent year, no question about it. And Daryl Morey did a great job putting together a team that scores very efficiently and can defend. But Dwight Howard can't be on the court at the same time as Ben Simmons because neither can shoot. They both need the paint. And that really limits them, I think, in the moment of truth in the playoffs. I think people don't believe in that formula. But the Sixers at this moment, I think at this moment, Embiid is the MVP of the league, and the Sixers have been the story in the East. Oh, what a show we had today. We laughed, we cried, we learned. Brady might be playing past 45. LeBron rolling around in the mud, coming out clean, not getting dirty. We're going to see you here tomorrow. Getting close. Look, the Super Bowl shows start in earnest tomorrow. We're getting ready for Super Bowl 55. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.